Maples are red, birches are yellow, hickories a golden bronze. Enjoy the hue, because you know it's true. The next stage is Long John's. I know. That's kind of a stretcher there. Hey, good to be back in Spectrumville, everybody. I knew I was going to trip over that. I never call it Spectrumville. Al Ross here. This is Spectrum West, a place where all of West Wisconsin comes to tell us what's happening in the arts and culture of where we live. This week, a big fundraiser takes the stage for the second annual. It's called Clearwater Review. It features 15 acts with names and talents you've heard and love. One of many volunteers, Ken Adler, is here. June 21st, the longest day of the year, is Make Music Day worldwide, and we're getting a jump on 2020 as Ann Katz of Arts Wisconsin and Aaron Friedman from New York's Make Music Alliance plan a road trip together around Wisconsin to circulate information on how we can make some beautiful noise. The Chippewa Valley Book Festival starts Monday, and Jim Oliver welcomes a featured author, Loretta Ellsworth. And that's the music of guitarist, singer, and songwriter Greg Gilbertson. And before they hop on stage at the Heidi Center in Chippewa Falls Friday night at 7:30, he and Sue Orfield are here. Now, if you want to see two people who love what they're doing and do it very well, then I suggest you see the show where saxophonist and songwriter Orfield and Gilbertson pool their resources and we get to swim around in it. They stopped by on a recent evening for a chat. You know, on the face of it, and this is going to sound terrible, but there's no other way to say it, Sue, you just can't say no, can you?
What a great way to begin. I mean, are you trying to say I'm easy? Is that what you're going for?
No, here's the way I've written it. You put the rate in collaborate.
That's a good way to say
very
it.
Very nice.
And your rate is rapid and considerable. We'll get to Greg's way of doing things in a moment, yes. But there is no That's one pleasure. More prolific. Sharing a stage or a studio with other musicians is definitely what it's all about for you.
There's no question about that, but it's so true at this moment in my life, especially, although I have friends who would tell me that this is every moment in my life for many years now. But it feels like right now I've just got 1,000 different irons and 1,000 different fires, and it's all very exciting. And one of my favorites is this one that I deal with Greg here.
You have friends that are appreciative of that being true in your life.
I love it.
As well,
I can't. So. I always, yes, I have a hard time saying no. I hope my mom
hears
this
heard.
Interview.
Yeah. You know, and it's interesting that you say, especially at this time in my life, because my next question was, has it always been that way? And did someone in your early musical days instill the importance of that for growth, or was it just natural for you?
My joy of all the different genres possible in music is what makes me want to play with as many different people as possible. I get to play, for instance, Greg's original music, and also find out at that same moment who he is on stage. He sort of lets his soul come through. So for me, it's this very social experience to play with different people and hear their original music and see that thing happen and understand who they are, you know what I mean? Well, in a musical way. So I've always loved bring it as much as I can, something different. And I've a few times gotten bitten in the butt by that, where that I was like, oh.
That comes from being easy.
Yeah. Oh, God, are we really going to go here? My husband is not listening to this.
Yeah. What you talked about with the soul and that kind of thing, that would lead me to wonder if along the way there were moments of real revelation whereby you thought you knew someone, and when you got on stage with them, it was a whole different ballgame. And this would have been the first time you performed with them, obviously.
Sure. I mean, so a lot of times how I meet people is on stage.
Oh, cool.
And that's my first introduction to them. And it is a lovely moment for me. Yeah.
And Greg, you and I have talked a few times. On those occasions, we've spoken about the different avenues you've taken, sometimes as just the instrumentalist, and then the vocal songwriting rises to the top, like on your CD, Surviving the Echoes. It's not this way for everybody, but the life of a musician is about what? Variety? Relationships?
Attention deficit disorder and boredom. I think that's why. I mean, I joke, but part of it is that, like, it's easy to get bored. The more I can expand and be part of a wider variety of musical projects, the less bored I am.
What do you gain from collaborating with other musicians than solving your boredom?
Here's my favorite part about it. When you're a musician, and particularly an instrumentalist, there's this abstract world that you inhabit that's unexplainable apart from the music itself. Like, okay, the music is the explanation, is the expression of that abstract world. And when you can share that with another person, another instrumentalist, that's a beautiful thing. So there is a way. Sue and I really have gotten to know each other through dynamics and note choices and improvisation and how we feel the flow of a song through. Now, sometimes, like we did yesterday morning when we rehearsed, we do actually pick out, I think we should bring it down right here, and we discuss those. But most of those, we're just riding a wave together. And as a musician, you're always kind of riding that wave, and you're seeing that, at least for me, I'm seeing that wave and that trajectory or whatever in kind of everywhere in life. I'm always kind of feeling life the way I feel music. And so in that way, I think music becomes like the truest expression of kind of who I am. But when you can ride that wave with another musician and learn over time, Sue and I have been playing music for a long time together, to not only predict one another, but to feel like we just stumbled into something and we both know exactly where to go with this. That I think is my favorite part of playing with you.
Absolutely. And when that happens with anybody on stage, there's this total feeling of riding the wave is an expression that many of my friends in the past have used, so it's a common, although I don't know if I've ever used that expression, but certainly it is this feeling like, here it comes, here we're going to jump on board, and it's a lovely feeling, and it is.
And it's different. You can absolutely do it with the band, with multiple pieces happening, but there's a purity to it with a duet. There's this dance that happens where you have less to consider, and I find myself being with the band, just being a little bit more, not clinical, but like, thought out. I have to predict. I have to think cognitively about, okay, if I do this, where are they going to go?
And it's
a little bit like steering a bigger ship, but with Sue, it's like steering a jet ski. It's like we can just go right away.
Oh, more good metaphors.
Sharp turns is what you're saying.
Yes, yes.
And it's okay. We'd go there together. So.
Okay, so how has the Sue and Greg show evolved since you say that you've been playing for a long time?
The very first time we played together was in a little place in Chippewa Falls that doesn't exist anymore, I don't think. You were playing a gig, and somehow you either invited me to come out, I think.
Yeah. Or you're pretty good about having your horn in the car. You showed up, and I think I said, did you bring a horn?
Yeah.
And you said, yeah.
Yeah,
and
we played together.
And then so we just made it work. And that was a little awkward. It was more cool that I'm playing with you, that I finally got to play with Sue, than the music itself was. But over the years, we've learned to...
Of course, Greg was only playing instrumental music. And so we were just playing guitar and saxophone, and there was no vocals in the mix. And I'm a huge fan of vocals. So this, now we have all three. There are a lot of instrumentals in our repertoire. But it's changed in that we're also supporting these amazing lyrics written by Greg. So the thing has grown, in my opinion, for the better.
I like being able to deliver two instruments at one time because, one, it's fun to calibrate the vocals with the damn to the guitar and to answer little vocal phrases, you know, within the chords and whatever. But also, you got two throttles, man. It's a dual outboard, you know.
Yeah.
And
a lot of water metaphors.
A lot of water metaphors. Yeah.
He's drinking a lot of water. That might be the whole deal there.
I'm loving it.
We're in the studio with Sue Orfield and Greg Gilbertson Friday night there at the Heidi Center, 7:30. CVCA.net is the website if you want to get some tickets or just show up. They usually just sell tickets right at that little cool window when you come up the stairs. Now, the Heidi release says it's going to be an evening of music that is both homegrown and world class, is the quote.
Wow, that's a good one.
So now, does that mean originals versus covers? What are we going to hear?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's both originals and covers, but that doesn't mean that there's not a lot of originality in the covers. What the tunes that we're playing of other people's are
fairly obscure, actually.
They're pretty obscure. I think people, with exception to the two Bach pieces that we plan on doing, I think people will know that we didn't write those.
Right.
but we're doing a couple Bach two-part inventions where on one, we kind of switch off between taking right hand and left hand on the piano inventions. which is interesting between acoustic guitar and saxophone.
It's really fun.
And the Heidi's a great room.
I can't wait to play on that stage.
Isn't that cool?
Beautiful, yeah. Beautiful.
I love that place.
Yeah, the sound in there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just like, first of all, there's all this wood on the stage. Yeah, I love it. I can't wait to play there.
And there's that balcony. Those are, mm-hmm. you know, and the balcony isn't far away. It's kind of intimate. Yeah. Not kind of, very.
It's a lovely venue.
Talk about writing music. Where does it fit into your daily or weekly grind?
I'll start, because I know that our processes are very different.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. For me, it's like, it's one of my favorite things to do, but I always feel like there's something that I should be doing that's more work-oriented. There is a lot of administrative stuff that you have to keep up on, and
yes.
I have to practice music for other people, and okay, so on and so forth, and the other stuff that I just keep my craft up on.
You feel guilty that you found time to write music.
Yeah, but then when I do, it's just like such a joy. So, I mean, I try to make time a lot. The composing part of it, that's the fun part. That's the like, woo, here it comes. Mm-hmm. This is really fun. And I have about 7 iPhone recordings. So.
Commenting on that process of putting things into your phone, that's awfully important, because I'm going to guess that both of you have probably forgotten more music than you put down.
Yesterday morning, I found a file on my computer of old instrumentals from like 2010 that I had totally forgotten about. And here's the cool part about it. I absolutely loved them.
Yeah.
I totally forgot about them. I forgot I ever wrote them. I don't even remember the tunings. They're instrumentals, so I'm dealing in alternate tunings a lot.
Yeah.
So now I get to go back and learn my own songs.
I've been there too.
With very little memory of how they actually went.
So when do you write?
It's been a while since I've sat down actually and composed. But usually I'll play with words. I'll stumble across a way of saying something or whatever. And then I'll just kind of let that gestate and it'll kind of crystallize out of there. And before I know it, there's the bones of a song. And by the time I get to that point where I can see kind of what the song is, what probably the melodic structure is, then it's just a matter of sitting down and fleshing it out. And that part's really, really fun. So.
And it's like a drop of water hitting and then the rings going up.
Yep.
I thought you'd do a water thing. Do it
for you.
Thanks. So, Western Wisconsin, here comes one, is a big pond.
Oh, here we go.
And there are a lot of musical fish swimming around. Talk to me about what it means to be one of those fish and whether or not it matters what size fish you are in that pond. Because this is a really cool musical pond.
You know, one of the things that I think I've done well, I've always held myself up against the best of the best. Like Billy Krause. Like, it's an absolute honor to play with Billy. So to play with some of those bigger fish in our little pond is just a joy of joys. And this is one of them right here, too.
Yeah.
You
Thank
know?
You. Yeah, for me, the more fish, the better.
Mm.
More people, more different kinds of music. I think you asked the question about whether, I don't know how you put it.
Whether it matters
whether
what size
fish you are.
Whether
you're a big
fish
or a small fish. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. No, I don't think so. My feeling on that is that if they have something to offer, then they should offer it. You know? So there are moments when I can be sitting in a lesson teaching a student, and I have been moved to tears by something that happened by a very amateur.
No kidding.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. An amateur, but this soul thing coming through, it does like, there it is. That's it. And it's like, oh, you know, so it's, no, I don't think it matters.
It's really fun when you see those people play from the heart.
In a lesson of all places. Yeah. That happens over and over and over again, where you hear people who are maybe not expert, and then you do hear people who are expert. And it only, for me, matters is this thing that's being presented. Is it coming from down, you know, inside? And then I'm happy.
Sue Orfield and Greg Gilbertson, Heidi Center, Friday night, 7:30. Be there. Thank you guys for coming in.
Thank you
Thanks
very
for
much
having
for having us and for putting up with us.
This is called The Unwitting Man About Town. Sue Orfield and friends. Theme for her TV show one time. Again, tickets online at cvca.net. If you're listening Friday evening, you still have time to head up the hill to the Heidi Center. Then just a few more steps up to that ticket window we talked about. Sue Orfield, Greg Gilbertson. Heidi Center, Friday night, 7:30. You're listening to Spectrum West here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up, the lineup for the Big Clearwater Review, Make Music Day in Wisconsin 2020, and Jim Oliver next. Hey, support for WPR comes from Art Z Gallery in Amory, presenting the painter Naomi Terry Salgado, photographer Earl Duckett, jewelry designer Diane Keeler, and glassblower Polly Cudd. More at artzgallery.org. Support also comes from Simply Done in Downsville, offering fair trade gifts and a space for meetings, retreats, or classes in their historic schoolhouse overlooking the Red Cedar Valley. simply-dunn.com. Support also comes from Charter Bank of Eau Claire, a locally owned community bank, now offering new checking account options with personalized customer service. More information is available at charterbank.bank. Now, the 20th Chippewa Valley Book Festival begins Monday and runs through Sunday the 27th, and who better to document some of who's appearing than the resident Spectrum bibliophile, Jim Oliver. This time of year for Jim is like turning a kid loose in the toy department at Christmas time.
Chippewa Valley Book Festival begins on Monday and will continue through Sunday, October the 27th. Among the presenters at this year's festival is Loretta Ellsworth, author of Stars Over Clear Lake. Her presentation is scheduled for 10:30 a.m. Saturday, October 26th, in the L.E. Phillips Public Library in Eau Claire. Loretta is a former teacher and author of four young adult novels. Her debut adult novel, Stars Over Clear Lake, is set in Clear Lake, Iowa. Loretta Ellsworth joins us by telephone from her home in Lakeville, Minnesota. Welcome to Spectrum West.
Thank you for having me.
I'm going to ask you about your writing career first. You've done the four young adult books, and then you branched out into really adult books. What got you started?
You know, I've been writing my entire life. I didn't know anyone who was a writer, though. So when I went to school, I decided to become a Spanish teacher and enjoyed teaching for many years. But I always loved writing. I wrote a few articles for magazines and was lucky to have those published, and that led me to take some classes in writing fiction. And I think because I was teaching younger readers, that's why I ended up writing for that age group.
Give me a time frame here, but you know, when did you have your first book published?
My first book was published in 2002, mm-hmm. And I was still teaching at the time.
So then how often did you pump them out, so to speak?
Not often enough. Every few years, I will have a book published. Right now, I just finished a revision of another adult historical novel, so there will be a few years in between Stars Over Clear Lake and that book.
Well, Stars Over Clear Lake is your first adult novel, as we pointed out. There's some spoiler alerts. Very carefully, tell us what's it about.
It's a story that takes place in the 1940s and in 2007. It goes back and forth in time. In the 1940s, it's a story of a girl named Lorraine who lives on a farm near Clear Lake with her family. Her brother is in France during World War II. Her father needs help on the farm, so he resorts to hiring German prisoners of war from the Algona POW camp. She begins by having a friendship with one of those German POWs, which eventually branches out into a romance. But then after the war, he's sent back to Germany, and she doesn't see him again for many years. Then one night she sees him playing at the surf ballroom, and when she sees him, it sort of brings back a lot of memories. But by that time, she's engaged to someone else. It brings some different problems.
Yeah. Talk a little, you're native of Mason City, you told me. How much of that life experience in Mason City / Clear Lake were you able to use in the book?
It's before my time, but I did grow up in that area. I attended dances at the surf ballroom myself for many years. And my parents actually met at the surf ballroom. It's part of the reason that I wrote about the surf ballroom. It's kind of a magical place, too. And in my book, in 2007, Lorraine is an older woman at that time, and she goes to the surf ballroom for the first time in many years. And she has some experiences that are kind of different. She sees some people from the past, and she's not sure if it's real or not. Mm-hmm. Also, her son-in-law is a fire investigator who's looking into the cause of the original surf ballroom, which burned down in 1947 and rebuilt across the street in 1948. She has some hard truths to face with that as well.
Characters that you use in the book, are they in any way related to people that you knew, or is it purely fiction?
It's mostly fictional, but I did use some real people. Carl Fox actually was the manager of the Surf Ballroom. So I incorporated real people into the story as well. Since this was a book that was so close to my own hometown, one of the teachers, Miss Berkland, is named after a teacher of mine. Miss Berkland was always so supportive of me and my writing career. And when I finished the book, she was 101 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
And the Surf Ballroom held a publication party for me with a big band.
Wow.
And she was living in a retirement home, and she had her 80-year-old son drive her up.
Okay.
So that was really wonderful to see her. I mean, can't get it better than having your 101-year-old teacher attend your publication party.
Wow, yeah. Well, she is Loretta Ellsworth, author of Stars Over Clear Lake. Her presentation will be Saturday, October 26th in the L.E. Phillips Memorial Public Library in Eau Claire. Talk a little bit about those POW camps. Where I grew up in East Central Minnesota, there weren't any there, and I never heard of such a thing until I got down around southern Minnesota. Talk a little bit about the POW camps and how they got along with the people in the area.
Well, there were more than 700 POW camps throughout the U.S. during World War II in every state except for Nevada and Vermont. Most of them were demolished after the war ended. The POW camp in Algona housed 10,000 Germans over the course of the war. It had an average of, I think, around 3,000 at any specific time. And they would work on farms as well as local factories because the workforce had been depleted. The men were serving overseas.
Yeah, some farm boys who were of draftable age were able to get deferred because they were needed on the farm. Apparently, in some cases, there were farmers who were kind of left in the lurch when their sons were sent off to war, so to speak. But getting back to the research, I guess, I'm interested in how you pulled together the information for the book. Were you able to study what was going on at the Algona POW camp? Is there information available?
There is. In Algona, actually, there's a POW museum. I think it's one of two or three that might be in the United States.
Hmm.
And they have a lot of artifacts from the actual camp, as well as a lot of pictures. There was a band. They have actual instruments. They have the bunks and a lot of the things from the actual camp. Plus a lot of artistic expression. They have poems, pictures drawn by the POWs. The POWs would get paid for their work, but it was very minimal, a few cents an hour. They would use that money at the camp to buy, you know, cigarettes and things like that. But a group of them saved up their money and bought materials to make life-size rendition of a nativity scene.
Hmm.
And I think it's over 50 pieces to that scene, and they donated it to the city of Algona when they went back to Germany. It's displayed every Christmas there. There was a lot of information that I was able to, you know, use just going to the museum.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot of research about the Surf Ballroom at the Clear Lake History Center, which is located in their library. I had two elderly aunts who attended the surf almost every night. So I interviewed them,
mm-hmm.
and they were very helpful. I wasn't able to find any POWs who were still alive. But I did speak with Dr. Richard Rattay from Mason City. He shared his father's story as a former POW who later resettled in Mason City, Iowa.
A lot of music buffs will remember Clear Lake, Iowa and the Surf Ballroom because of a plane crash on February 3rd, 1959, the day the music died. The crash claimed the lives of Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, and J.P. Richardson, the Big Bopper. You told me earlier that you were planning another adult novel. Actually, you've sent it on to your publisher or your agent. Can you give us a hint on what it's about?
Right. That one's based on a true story as well, and it's a very fascinating story. Mm-hmm. And I had read about this a few years ago, the story of a countess in Europe whose family had lost everything during the war. And shortly after the war ended, she met a soldier from Minnesota and fell in love with him.
Mm-hmm.
He asked her to marry him. And it took a year or two to get the papers and money settled so that she could come over on his GI visa.
Hmm.
And when she came over here, she found out that he had married someone else just shortly beforehand.
Oh, my gosh.
Her country was under communist control, and she didn't want to go back because they were keeping records of people who fraternized with Americans.
Mm-hmm.
So she went to see Cedric Adams, who was a famous newspaper man here.
Ah, yes.
He ended up putting a picture of her with a fake name in the newspaper and asking if any of the returning GIs wanted to help this woman out by marrying her. And she received 1,786 offers of marriage.
Oh, my God.
But I guess it's the first bachelorette.
Yeah, boy.
So she settled in a small town. That's basically all that they know of her because they didn't use her real name, and and no one ever really followed up on the story much. So, yeah, that's the story of that.
Okay. We've been talking to Loretta Ellsworth, author of the novel Stars Over Clear Lake. She will be appearing during the Chippewa Valley Book Festival, 10:30 a.m. Saturday, October 26th, in the L.E. Phillips Memorial Public Library in Eau Claire. Loretta, thanks so much for talking to us. I really enjoyed the book, and I'm sure others are going to as well.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed talking to you, too.
Fun stuff. Hey, he's still here. Hey, Jim, please don't leave before telling us what's on stage in West Wisconsin. It's all yours.
Thank you, sir. The Eau Claire Children's Theater is presenting The Crucible through Sunday in the Oxford Theater. The University of Wisconsin Eau Claire Theater is presenting Company through Sunday, and next Wednesday through Sunday in the Jamp Theater, in the Pablo Center, and the Confluence in downtown Eau Claire. The musical Newsies, a production of the Menominee Theater Guild, will end its run Friday through Sunday in the Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts in Menominee. Y-Rep Productions will present Once Upon a Tower at 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. Saturday in the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. Two Griffins Theater will present Poe Thursday through Saturday, October the 24th to the 26th in the Grand Theater. Singin' in the Rain will be presented by the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson, October 25th through November 17th on Fridays and Saturdays at 7:30 p.m., as well as Sundays at 2 p.m. The St. Croix Art Barn of Osceola will present the 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, October the 24th through the 27th. Blythe Spirit, a production of the Northern Star Theater of Rice Lake, will be presented Friday through Sunday and the following Friday through Sunday. The Festival Theater production of The Diary of Anne Frank continues through October 25th in the Franklin Square Black Box Theater in St. Croix Falls. Blythe Spirit, a live radio show, will be presented by the River Falls Community Theater Friday and Saturday and the following Friday and Saturday in the River Falls Public Library. The St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater of Hudson is presenting The Outsider Fridays and Saturdays through October the 26th. And the Eau Claire Children's Theater has scheduled auditions for Frog and Toad at 5:30 p.m. Monday and Tuesday in the Oxford Theater.
Thank you, sir. Spectrum West on WPR. Make Music Day happens worldwide and has been since 1982. Right now, 120 countries and over 1,000 locations participate, from huge concerts to people just playing on a street corner. And Wisconsin, as you might expect, is pretty good at coming up with cool ways to make a difference. Well, Ann Katz from Arts Wisconsin is motoring around the Badger State beginning the end of next week with Aaron Friedman, who leads the Make Music Alliance and founded a place called Make Music New York. There you go. They're visiting various Wisconsin locations. We decided to yak with them before they hit the road. Make Music Day is just what the doctor ordered. In fact, maybe we could insert the word loud into the title. Make Loud Music Day, so that for one day we don't hear any of the dogmatic din that permeates our everyday. Just a bit of commentary there, but hey, I am so happy to talk about Make Music Day simply on the basis of it being a wonderful idea. Aaron, let's get to know you a little bit. Producing the annual June 21st New York celebration begun in 2007. It all started because you wanted New York to be a bit quieter. Help me understand that seeming contradiction, will you?
I was living in Washington Heights in Manhattan while studying music at Columbia University. I was shocked at how noisy everything was in the city, especially the car alarms going off all the time outside my apartment. So it's true, for the first few years I lived in New York, my passion was to silence the car alarms. And I, in fact, started a political organization called Silent Majority, Citizens Against Car Alarms, to promote that cause. I was able to get legislation passed in the New York City Council to ban the installation of new car alarms. in the city. And in that process, I realized, you know, I don't hate all sound. I really just hate the car alarms. If we could replace that noise with something a little bit more creative and inspiring, I'd actually be very happy about that.
Hopefully, part of that movement was educating people on not hitting that little red button on their fob.
Well, that's a lost cause.
So is there any data on how quickly after 1982 Americans jumped on the Make Music Day concept?
The event began with just 3 weeks' notice in France.
Oh,
the Ministry of Culture in 1982 said on June 1st they wanted to invite everyone to come outside and make music together for 30 minutes on the summer solstice, June 21st. And to everyone's surprise, hundreds of thousands of people just showed up and started playing and didn't stop after 30 minutes. They played all night, and it became this kind of new French tradition. It really didn't happen in the U.S., before I started Make Music New York in 2007. There were a few events at French embassies and kind of people who had experienced this event in France before wanted to do something for the day. But it was actually quite surprising to me that this kind of obvious and successful idea hadn't yet been imported into our country.
As you alluded, June 21st is the longest day of the year, allowing us the most time possible to make music in a given day. Any idea of what the U.S. figures are? I mean, it does happen in cities large and villages small.
Yeah, about 85 cities in the U.S. now have large-scale Make Music Day events on June 21st. We counted 5,363 events this last year.
Okay.
But certainly there are some that we don't know about.
That leads into my next curiosity about whether or not there's a reporting factor. Do or should people who have an event on June 21st become part of the alliance?
Well, our organization is set up to help cities organize a kind of large-scale public celebration. If you're just having an event in your backyard with your trombone and a couple of kids playing the ukulele, you know, you certainly don't need to join us in any official way to do that. We want everyone to be making music on June 21st. Of course, we would love to hear about everything that's happening.
Sure.
No,
well,
absolutely.
Okay, so we know Wisconsin has been a good partner. I read about some of the fun things Wisconsin residents and cities have had in the past. But Ann Katz of Arts Wisconsin is also on the line. She and Aaron will be roaming Wisconsin at the end of the month. Actually, the pace is rather frenetic. You guys are in 2 to 3 cities every day. You're spreading seeds, in a way. Anne, what's exactly going on, and where will you be?
Well, I'm taking Aaron on a road trip from Kenosha to Webster.
Wow.
And everywhere in between. Basically, he's going to get off the plane on Friday, and we're not going to stop until I bring him back to the airport on Wednesday. I'm really looking forward to showing him the breadth and diversity of our great state. And I'm looking forward to helping people around the state know that they can be part of this global extravaganza.
Yeah.
So we're going to have fun.
That's the voice of Ann Katz. She's director of Arts Wisconsin. Also on the line, Aaron Friedman, president of the Make Music Alliance. And the topic today is Make Music Day 2020. Informational meetings across, up, down Wisconsin happen between October 26th and 29th. That just led me to wonder, is anybody going to know it's you? I mean, are you going to have this wonderfully colored car with a big horn on the top? Or what is it kind of?
Well, I do want to do a travelogue on social media. And Aaron, we haven't talked about that yet. But, you know, I want to be able to tweet and post things on Facebook and
sure.
do some videos around the state. Again, we are going to be in something of a mad rush, but I hope to be able to show Aaron our great outsider art sites and our beautiful environment. And he says he really likes frozen custard.
Oh, good.
So we are going to make sure to partake of that at any point along the way.
Maybe we need a frozen custard truck, like an ice cream truck.
Playing
some kind of jingle, and that could really bring everything together.
That's
summer
a great
is coming,
idea.
And frozen custard is really the ultimate way to celebrate the season.
The frozen custard trucks are probably put away for the season, so you might be able to borrow one.
Well, I'll work on that.
Yeah, maybe next time.
Maybe next time. Well, definitely the idea of having some kind of musical accompaniment like the ice cream trucks, I think I'll see what I can do about that. Maybe a loudspeaker on top of the car.
Good deal. I was pretty proud of some of the ways Wisconsin folks have celebrated, like playing the P-Buzz, which I'm ordering, by the way. Went online, had to find out what it was. They're cool. Other things like wandering musical art, instruments made from shovels, and Platteville's way of showcasing the world's largest M, which on June 21st stands for music, of course. Now, I shotgunned email information about the concept to some musical movers and shakers in my neck of the woods, saying that if this part of Wisconsin can't make great music, nobody can. And I think the wheels are turning toward some considerable participation. But if you can't attend any of the sessions during your whirlwind tour, how do people get involved?
Well, right now they can get in touch with me at artswisconsin.org, but I will say that by the time Aaron gets to Wisconsin, I'm going to have a very basic website that says makemusicwisconsin.org, and so there'll be information there. We're also going to be using social media and online resources to get the word out, because most people can't come to the meetings at the end of October, but we want, as we've been saying, as many communities participate. We might do some webinars where the information that we're going to be bringing around the state we can do in an online format. So right now, from now, you know, through, I don't know, April, we're going to be promoting the idea that every community can participate, and then we're going to be promoting the idea that every person in every community can participate in the actual day.
Cool. So, Aaron, does your schedule include this kind of a hike in most states? If so, you're making me tired just thinking about it.
Well, I think as you say, Wisconsin is exceptionally fertile ground for music and for community events like this. But the state of Connecticut, a couple years ago, decided to get involved in a big way, and they now have 18 different regional organizing committees for Make Music Connecticut with over 700 events throughout the state. And that's a pretty small state. I think Wisconsin could easily surpass Connecticut, quite frankly.
Absolutely. We're going to be focused on that.
All right. So specifically, the places are Stevens Point, Land O'Lakes, Eagle River, Washburn, Webster, La Crosse, Mineral Point, Kenosha, Sheboygan, and Green Bay. And as Ann said, every custard stand in between.
And don't forget pie, too.
I forgot the pie. There are several ways to get information online. How are they? Who wants to be first?
Right now, I think artswisconsin.org is the way to go. We have information on that right now. We'll keep adding to it. At some point, we'll have a makemusicwisconsin.org website. We're going to be meeting with public radio when Aaron is here. They're excited about helping promote the idea statewide. I think we're going to have a lot of partners from the tourism world to the music world to just the basic people in communities.
Yeah, leave it to public radio to barge in. Good for them. So, Aaron, you do have a website, and what are people going to, is that a whole national thing?
If you visit makemusicday.org, you can see all of the communities across the country that are already participating in a large way, and also some photos and videos from around the world. Just the last couple of years, Make Music China has really gotten to be huge. Australia, the UK, even Lagos, Nigeria has a really significant Make Music Day right now.
Being as traveled as you are within this event and the concept, is there a couple ways that people have celebrated Make Music Day so uniquely that they stand out in your mind?
I have a soft spot for big, spectacular events like the percussionists on the M in Platteville that you mentioned. Lots of places, like Buffalo, New York, has abandoned grain silos that have been used for double bass concerts on Make Music Day. New York City, we've had floating stages in a Central Park lake for percussionists to play on, and the audience seems to rent a rowboat and actually go out in order to hear the music. So I think the idea that music can pop up absolutely anywhere on this day, and that anyone who feels they might want to be a musician, even if it's just for this one day of their life, can come out and join the fun.
That's Aaron Friedman, and he is executive director and founder of Make Music New York, also with the Make Music Alliance. Also on the line, Ann Katz, director of Arts Wisconsin. It's been a pleasure, and I am envisioning a very loud day in Wisconsin on June 21st of 2020. Thank you guys for being with us on WPR, and enjoy the road trip.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for your interest, Al. You're the first interview we've done.
Well, that's cool. ArtsWisconsin.org, MakeMusicDay.org, and on Twitter, use the hashtag MakeMusicDay. Always to find out more, watch the progress along the way. Let's make the music coming from Western Wisconsin on June 21st visible from outer space. What do you say? Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio, where support for WPR comes from Charter Bank of Eau Claire, a locally owned community bank now offering new checking account options with personalized customer service. More information is available at charterbank.bank. Support also comes from Simply Done in Downsville, home of Dunn County Pottery, featuring wood-fired pottery influenced by nature, including tableware, vases, and cookware. More at simply-dunn.com. The Variety Show. Gee, they were fun years ago. Lots of towns had them, a way to see some of the talent next door. And you know, it's still a good idea, especially when it raises money for a great cause. Like the second Clearwater Review will do Sunday, October 27th. For those who might have been living in a cave or are new to the area, let's define the places for which this benefit raises money. First, Beacon House.
Well, Beacon House is a family homeless shelter that's in downtown Eau Claire, and I think a lot of people are familiar with it. Beacon House holds six families at a time. Okay. And these are all families that have been experiencing homelessness, which means they've been living in their cars or camping in the area. I mean, this is a very important vital need that they fill.
Is it operated under someone's auspices? Is it under a bigger umbrella, or is it just its own nonprofit organization?
Well, it's affiliated with a national group called Family Promise.
Okay.
And technically, Beacon House likes to be referred to as Family Promise of the Chippewa Valley.
See, I'm glad I asked, because I didn't know that. Yes, and now you wanted to segue to Western Dairyland, and man, I went online, and they have quite a big footprint in West Wisconsin.
They really do, and over four different counties, too. And they provide a whole variety of services, everything from training at-risk high school students in carpentry skills to running Head Start programs to helping homeless individuals find housing. But they also do have a family homeless shelter. Mm-hmm. It's actually, I think, four different apartments for families to live in. These are also homeless families, much like at Beacon House. So altogether, Eau Claire has shelter facilities for 10 families at a time.
Okay, and before we move on to a few details about the show, of which there are many, let's point out the consistent need for donations to these vital places. Yes, this fundraiser provides a good chunk of change, I'm sure, but they do depend on people's general everyday generosity, do they not?
Yes, they do. And actually, starting last year, we've had a situation where there is a significant waiting list for families to get into these shelters. Right now, there are about seven families in the city limits of Eau Claire that are living in their cars or camping out. This is just, you know, for me, it's unconscionable.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone says, well, build bigger shelters. Well, the real answer is to help the families in the shelter to move into apartments. And that's been the big problem that's been happening this past couple of years, is that the supply of apartments for people that are really low income seems to be drying up. And so this is the new frontier for homeless services in Eau Claire.
And we're speaking at a time of year, the middle of October, when the thought of someone being homeless and living in their car gets more troubling.
It really does.
Because of the winter season coming. And
yes. Well, this summer I was involved with, they call it a point in time count. Twice a year, a group of people goes out and, well, it's required nationally for certain things. And we just see how many homeless people are out in an individual night.
Mm.
There were 23 in the middle of July.
Here?
Here. Okay. Yes, I was with a group. We found three or four in downtown Eau Claire.
Okay.
So I mean, this is a very real concern in Eau Claire.
When you approach someone, you say you found them. You approach them. You just ask them point blank, are they homeless? During that process, do you get to know more about them? Do you offer them services? Do you find surprising circumstances whereby they at one point were regular and happy contributors to society and now not so much?
You do. These counts are very well organized so that by law we have to go out at night rather than in the middle of the day to meet people. So imagine if you are sleeping in downtown Eau Claire in front of a building and some stranger is coming up to you. We come bearing gifts and water bottles and backpacks and things like that. And they always have the option not to speak with us. I would say we try to keep it
quick when we see them, but we do give them lots of information about services that they can find.
Good deal. In the studio with Ken Adler, he is a volunteer at Beacon House in Western Dareland as well. We're here, though, to talk about the Clearwater Review. It's the second annual, and it's coming up on Sunday, October 27th. It's a fun afternoon at the Pablo Center and raises some very necessary funds for these two wonderful organizations and facilities. The show, Ken, as I was telling you prior, we don't have time for too much detail on all of the acts, but I believe that they're all popular enough. If we just mention the names, we'll have people who know who they are and what to expect. But let's go down the list. You have them in order of how they're going to appear in the show, which is kind of neat because it's like we have a radio program here. Collective Choir goes on first.
They sing what I would call inner city gospel music. You know, I've been to New York City and gone on a Harlem gospel tour. This is kind of the feel that you get when you listen to the Collective Choir. This is a very well-coordinated choir with a very good backup band. This is a great way to start a variety show.
Yeah, and the EC in the middle of Collective is capitalized because it stands for Eau Claire, obviously.
Yes.
Going on, second, I'm not going to try to pronounce her name.
Deja Lowe. We first became aware of her last spring when she was in the newspaper. This is a senior at Altoona High School, and she won the State of Wisconsin Poetry Out Loud contest. And then went to the national competition and did very well in reciting poetry. But she also got first place in writing a poem at this competition. She's really talented, and I can't wait to see her in action.
Third up, the Eileen Phillips Cohen String Quartet. They're from UW Eau Claire, four young gentlemen. And after them, someone we know well here at WPR because she was a volunteer here for a long time, Deb Brown and her group of Eau Claire Women in Theater.
Deb Brown actually has written a new poem that they're going to be doing. These are a really funny, really talented drama group that it just seems they get more famous every month with the things they do.
Then someone to whom at least two or three of my dogs have gone for some training, Karen Rude, Rude Dog University. What's she going to be doing on stage with a pooch or two?
I thought it was going to be a pooch or two. When I spoke with her last week, she was saying 10 dogs are going to put on some sort of a Green Bay Packers show on stage. I think this is pretty unprecedented for the Pablo Center, and it should be a lot of fun.
They might run some football plays with that many dogs. Okay, and then the Innocent Men, vocal group from UW Eau Claire, who have quite a heritage, and it's an all-male a cappella group.
Yes. If you've seen them in action, you know how great they are. Yeah. Last year we had Audacious, the women's a cappella group from the university, perform.
Oh, cool.
So we thought we'd mix it up with the men's group this year, and they're going to be great.
Since 1985. Wow. The Northern Airs are from North High School, Eau Claire North.
Yes. Rachel McElwarm is their director, and this is the high school show choir from North High School. Mm-hmm. If you've seen show choirs, it takes my breath away sometimes because their singing is excellent, plus they choreograph it, and they will be a great way to finish off the first act of the show.
Okay, so I have a feeling we've just gotten back from intermission, and we are going to get really fired up going into the second act because it begins with the Sue Orfield Band, and they're good.
Sue is an amazing saxophonist, and what I've always liked about her stage presence is she makes sure that all of the other players with her really shine. It's been a delight just speaking with her on the phone because she's such an energetic, fun person.
Followed by Rob Reed. We've had him on the show. Neat storyteller.
And he has published over 150 magazine articles. He knows how to tell a good story, and he says that there will be some audience participation with his story, too.
Okay, good. So we're in Act Two, and next up, the UW Eau Claire Concert Dance Company.
This is a student-run organization at UW Eau Claire, and they do all their own choreography. If you think of any person who has gone through dance classes in high school, what do they do after high school? They get even better once they get to the university. They have chosen some really tricky music, I think, to perform to, and there are going to be some costume changes right in the middle of the dance and stuff. It's going to be a great show.
Followed by An Angel with a Harp.
I think that's a good way of putting it. Sarah Orr is a woman who has been performing at nursing homes in hospice care, and I met her with the work that she did at Positive Avenue's Homeless Drop-In Center in Eau Claire. Mm. She goes there once a month, and she changes the entire atmosphere. We've got a lot of, you know, high-energy acts, and when she gets on stage, she's going to change the atmosphere in a real nice way.
We'll get relaxed.
Yeah.
But then, following the harp, uh-oh, it's Balter party.
Yes. Spencer Roten is a high school student that many people may know of because he's won so many awards for his dancing and singing. Oh, he's been the youngest member of the Kids from Wisconsin for 2 years in a row.
Oh, wow.
And he is with this Balter Party independent rock group. They've written all their own music, and I can't wait to see them in action.
And then we're going to get cerebral, and we're going to listen to Max Garland, who's a good friend of Wisconsin Public Radio and the Big River Radio Wave. He'll be appearing on the Christmas show of the Big River Radio Wave, by the way. You know, he's a former Wisconsin Poet Laureate, just a very polished poet.
Yes, he's going to be a big help for us, I think.
And then we go a whole different direction.
If any of you have seen World Wrestling Federation wrestling on TV,
yeah,
you're like, well, I don't know about this. We have Showtime Championship Wrestling, a comedy group.
What a nice finale, because everyone loves a marching band.
Well, it's the Memorial High School Marching Band under the direction of Eric Dasher. This is going to be a marching band with 90 students. They will be marching down the aisles. It will really get you pumped up for the end of the show.
Cool. And we don't want to appear as if we neglect the competition. The MC is our good friend John Murphy, who is on Greatest Hits 98.1, an Eau Claire radio station. He's a bubbly guy. Fun to see him do his thing. How do we get there, Ken? How do we get tickets?
You can just go to pablocenter.org.
And again, this is a benefit to end homelessness in Eau Claire. It's called Clearwater Review. It's the second annual, beacon-house.org or westerndairyland.org. Ken Adler, thanks for volunteering as much as you do, and thanks for volunteering to sit in the radio hot seat. It's going to be a fun afternoon.
Well, thank you, Al. I think it will be.
The Clearwater Review for the benefit of Beacon House and Western Dairyland Homeless Shelters, Sunday, October 27th, 1:30 p.m., Pablo Center. Hey, don't worry, the Packers play at night, okay? Here's some Spectrum memos for you. If you're listening Thursday, Galladay Gallery in Eau Claire is featuring the music of Peter Phippen, Teat Reid, and Victoria Shoemaker tonight from 7 to 8:30. Also tonight, if you're listening Thursday from 6 to 8:30, see a painting demo with Terry Meyer. And Saturday from noon to 3, it's Soup Saturday, all at 200 Main in downtown Eau Claire. Don't forget the first Chippewa Valley Jazz Orchestra concert of the 10th big season is Friday. The music of Harry Connick Jr., Pablo Center, ChippewaJazz.org, and PabloCenter.org are those websites. Saturday night, listen to Country Classics by Becky Schlegel Band at the Heidi Center. Saturday, the Red Cedar Sounds chapter of Sweet Annalines present their 12th annual Harvest of Harmony Cabaret, Americana. The matinee begins at 3 in the Martin Anderson Gym in Colfax. Saturday night, Silver Dome near Neillsville, the Rock and Roll Extravaganza. Check out the lineup at silverdomeballroom.net. Colleen Ray with Sinatra and Company at the Alliance Church of the Valley in St. Croix Falls. Okay, details at festivaltheater.org. Thanks to Dean and Kate for being here. Next week, very cool book about jazz for kids. Ed Willett and Cheryl Leah are here. We'll talk about a documentary, another Sierra Club event. I'm Al Ross for Jim Oliver. See you next week. Thanks.